On the next Stirring It Up with Barry and Kevin, tips on holiday planning from Rick Rogers, author of Christmas 101,
and Christmas gifts from the extravagant to the inexpensive.
And we'll be talking to our buddy Deb from Duck.
Salami, Tommy.
Sunday morning at 10 Central on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Hoping to take in a movie or two over the Thanksgiving holiday? Today on the Afternoon Magazine, recommendations from Edwin Jael, founder of the Unit for Cinema Studies at the University of Illinois. He is also a professor of French at the U of I. Edwin Jael has attended and written about many European film festivals, including the great granddaddy of fests, Cannes. His reviews about current films appear regularly in the News Gazette newspaper of Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, your questions and comments about the movies are welcome. Maybe you have a recommendation to make, a film you've seen recently in the theater or at home on video. Join us with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening, call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Edwin Jael, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been a long time. It's been too long.
Yes, it's not my fault.
Okay, point taken. Well, the holiday movie season is upon us. What are you looking forward to seeing?
What I'm looking forward to see, that's a tricky question. I'm not looking forward to anything because I've been so disappointed with the majority of the films that have been shown of the last year, the last season, including summer and fall. There have been so few things. And I actually don't go out to see so many films. I see about two a week, unlike, say, someone like Roger Ebert in Chicago, who, of course, we're not in the same class, especially financially. And Roger sees lots of everything. It's incredible. He's an incredibly hard worker. He's a wonderful guy. Little plug for Roger. Not that he needs it. And he's very, very busy. It's incredible how he manages all the stuff he does. And I suspect that some films, I'm sure, he, like other major newspaper or magazine critics, not major critics necessarily, but major media, they get all sorts of goodies from Hollywood constantly and other places and distributors, including videos, so that if Roger is reviewing for, say, a certain week, five films, which is already a lot, or six, he may have seen eight or nine, including some stuff that is not out, that is in video. We don't have such facilities in Champaign-Urbana. We're trying to fight that and explain to the distributors that we have some small importance in the newspaper, radio, television. So I don't see so many films in theaters. But I do see a lot of films on television, on cable, without commercials. And what I'm looking forward to, in a sense, is to catch up on some goodies, whether familiar or not, on AMC, Turner Classic Movies, Encore, not Bravo so much, although they have some good things, because Bravo has ruined its reputation with connoisseurs by cutting films for commercials, which means that the films that you see not only have interruptions, but also are made shorter in many cases. So that is a devious answer, but I won't be pinned down to... I'm not a groupie of news. I don't sit there and read Variety, which I get, but to find out what's coming out. It's wasted time. When it's out, I see it, and then I make a decision.
Well, if you see maybe two movies a week, how do you make your decision about what you'll go on see?
That's an excellent question, and it's an impossible question to answer. You develop... if you're an experienced critic, which I happen to be, if you have a background in that, if you've been watching films for, in my case, for about 125 years or so, you sniff them out. You become like those dogs that they have at customs that they take around to where the suitcases are, and they stop before the suitcase, they raise their tail, they go, wow, wow, and there's heroin or hashish or something in this. Really, it becomes partly instinctive. Now, it's not just that. It's the fact that you do read a little bit or you communicate with some people, and you get pre-echoes about certain films. You also know the directors. Mm-hmm. For example... there's a film which I haven't seen, but I have to see, which is called The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc. Now, Joan of Arc, as you know, is the patron saint of France. She was a real person. Her trial was an incredible thing. What's the date? 1341 or something like that. And a lot of films have been made. Some of them are absolute classics. One made by... Carl Theodor Dreyer, a Danish person, the last great silent film. It was silent because it couldn't afford. It was remade, but totally differently, not as The Passion of Joan of Arc, but now as The Trial of Joan of Arc, by Robert Bresson, B-R-E-S-S-O-N, who is the most austere French director, which we happen to have at the university, a print, very rare. And I'm going to show that to my class in a few days. Then there's been a film with Ingrid Bergman and so on and so forth. There have been others. So it's a rich subject. Now, I haven't seen the latest one, which is made by a Frenchman called Luc Besson. Not Bresson, but Besson. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling people, don't confuse. There's a difference of one letter there. And...
But he made that movie that you didn't like, The Fifth Element.
He made... I hated The Fifth Element, and I hate Luc Besson's work, except for a film that Frenchman... He made in New York called The Professional, which isn't bad, about a killer, but a killer with a good side. And then he made Nikita, La Femme Nikita, which is called in French The Woman Nikita, which was remade... which was pretty good, not excellent, but pretty good, remade as a Nikita in as a movie, and then there was a television series. But his other films, like The Big Blue and everything, I think he's pretentious as all get out. He may be listening, since he lives in California now. I wasn't going to see it, but then my students, all, so many of them, wanted to do comparative papers among the various treatments of Joan of Arc, which, more power to them, it's a good idea. So I'm going to have to see it. But I know I won't like it very much. So, it's actually easy for anybody to find out what critics are saying about films. Mm-hmm. If they have access to a computer, which most people do today, and if they can go to something called MRQE, Movie Review Query Engine, which is a wonderful thing by some guy I know in the Eastern Seaboard, that collects every day the reviews from a large variety of sources. And you make a query, you type the title, and there you get the whole list. In the case of a film like Titanic, there were something like 150 entries. In the case of the most films, they're between 25 and 40, which is plenty. So you can read ahead of time. especially if you live in Champaign-Urbana, where things get there a bit later than in the big cities.
Yeah. Now, do you often, or never read reviews before going and seeing the film?
It's a mixed bag. Sometimes I read reviews before I see a film. I automatically at least glance at the reviews of the New York Times, which I get daily. I don't try to read them really. I try to scan them to just get a quick impression. Some of them make it easier because there's the star system. Some don't have the stars. So if I see a film that gets one star or two stars, it means that the review is negative. However, often after I've written my review, I go back to see how I compare it with the others. And, for example, the last film I reviewed
there was another one, wasn't there?
Gosh,
there was one in Saturday's paper.
Yes, there was one. Here it is. You tell me what it is.
Okay.
Here we go. Patience, listeners, patience. Yes. It is blast. Okay, never mind.
I know that you reviewed Happy Texas last week.
And it's lots of fun. Mm-hmm. It is a film. It doesn't get too many stars, but it's not a great film. But it's a first film, and it's very, very funny. The one that's coming up. Okay, it'll come to me. I just did it, but I think I must be getting gaga in some ways. Anyway, and that film. Oh yes, it's the latest James Bond film.
Oh,
The World Is Not Enough, which is an idiotic title because it has nothing to do with the film. And I'm kind of an aficionado of James Bond films, including played by people who don't. Whom the purists don't like very much, you know, like Roger Moore, for example. I think Roger Moore is wonderful. I saw it, and I gave it a one star out of charity, one star, which means that I thought it was awful. After I wrote my review, I did go to that database, and I checked to see what other people said. 3 stars, 3.5 stars, 2.5 stars at least, and so forth. So I'm in a super minor minority in this particular case. And it's a good thing I hadn't read them before. I might have been influenced.
That's interesting that you are an aficionado of Bond films. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Oh, I love the good ones. I love the
Which are the best?
Oh, I don't know. The early ones, Dr. No, for example, that was a good one. Name it. Which is the one that takes place also in the Adriatic Sea with that very beautiful French actress? Never mind.
Maybe somebody who's listening will help us out.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a walking memory. I never have been. But I like even Never Say Never Again. Just name it. There are very few Bond films that I have not liked. The other day I watched, for the first time in my life on television, Casino Royale, which is not counted officially as a Bond film because it's a spoof, and which was terribly uneven. Some very funny parts and some very awful parts. But that is not a orthodox Bond movie. The three films with Pierce Brosnan, Pierce Brosnan. I don't know. I think what I said in my review, I prefer a Pierce Arrow to a Pierce Brosnan. A Pierce Arrow being a classic American automobile made in the 20s and early 30s. Great car.
So you like Roger Moore and Sean Connery. So.
Oh, I like the others too. I like who else was. I like the guy who was in His Majesty's Secret Service. He was he made only one Bond film, Lazenby. His name is Lazenby, Lazenby, not very well known. And very often the Bondians kind of say, Lazenby. I thought it was very good. So there's some very exciting Bond films. I mean, they're not philosophical or anything like that, but they have their own humor. But this last one, I think it's incredibly bad. I gave it a star because of three reasons. I gave one-third of a star to Robbie Coltrane, who has a small role here. He plays a mafioso, a Russian mafia guy, and he's really very good. He's the only one who livens up the screen. Another third of a star because the plot involves building an oil pipeline that will go to Western Europe from Soviet Azerbaijan, and other Baku. And I thought that wasn't too bad an idea because it's in the news. This is what's happening now. The third one was the director, who's Michael Apted. And I have a very soft spot for Michael Apted. He is actually connected very indirectly to the University of Illinois because he directed the
the Seven Up series.
Well, the Seven Up series are magnificent.
Right.
They're documentaries.
Okay, I can't think of what else.
And the Coal Miner's Daughter. Coal Miner's Daughter, which is an extremely good film, and which was written by someone from here, someone who was here in the English department and went to Hollywood. And he has some other very good films to his credit. He's an Englishman, but he's an Englishman who has been junketing between Hollywood. He has two homes. And he's also an actor, he's also a producer, but he is a good person. And those documentaries he made, 7 Up, he started with 7 Up. People thought it was publicity for 7 Up, but it's a joke. But it was 7-year-old English kids, mostly from working classes, whom he photographed and interviewed. And that was for the BBC, it was a BBC or something production. It was such a big hit that he hadn't planned it that way. He was kind of obligated to do a follow-up, which was 7 years later. He took it by increments of...
Mm-hmm.
So it was, at 14, he called it 7-Up-Up or something like that. And then 14, 21, 28, and his latest one, which I'm hoping to see here, is people at the age of 42.
That's a wonderful concept. I haven't seen all of them. I think I've seen a couple of them.
They're all very good, yes.
But actually, I believe that his latest film in that series, following a group of people since they were seven, catching up with them every 7 years, that is, in some cities, I think that is playing.
It's already
in some big cities.
Yes,
right?
Yes. But of course, we are the orphans of the storm here.
Well, I suppose we're not too far from Chicago.
No, and there is there's some very good films. It's interesting. It sounds like a plug, and perhaps it is a plug. But the Art Theater, the so-called New Art Theater, does have a very, very good record of bringing things that other people won't touch. Except that in some cases, if they want a film at the Art Theater and suddenly some big chain says, we want that film too, they drop it from the Art, take it to the big chain, not realizing that it'll be seen by more people at the Art than the chain, because the chain, like, I won't name them in town, there's not that kind of public that sees, quote-unquote, art movies. Although I must say that the chains have also very good films sometimes. They're the ones, the artist is showing Happy Texas, which, I repeat, is not a great film, but it's lots of fun. And the other one is, in January, they're going to bring Renoir's Grand Illusion, La Grande Illusion, 1937, which is one of the top handful of films ever made. It's a war film, but it doesn't show war. There's no killing. It's a war film without hate. It's a very humanistic film. It's magnificent. It's one of the best films ever made. And that will be in a new print, which was discovered in a lunatic asylum, either in Denmark or in Norway. I mean, it's incredible. It's almost funny. And it's a new print, which nobody has ever seen. And it's going to be out soon on DVD. It's already out, I think, DVD and video. But it's nice to see it on a big screen. Around sometime in January, I urge the art people to schedule it when there are students in town, too, because they have to see it. Mm. Please, please don't miss that film. That's the gem.
I'm looking forward to that. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Edwin Jael. He's the founder of the Unit for Cinema Studies at the University of Illinois. And he is here to talk with us about the movies. If you'd like to join us this afternoon, your questions and comments are welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening, call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. We have a caller coming in, and so we're going to go to that person as soon as that call is lined up. There we go. Our first caller of the afternoon on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Could you repeat that movie review website?
Sure. The website for the database,
yes,
of reviews.
MRQE, Movie Review Query Engine.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose after that you put .com.
MRQE.com.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
It's precious, yes.
Good.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. Our next caller is on line two, and that call is coming in, and here we go. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, I have a pretty basic question. I hope it's not too blunt, but I was wondering why people need film critics like Ebert, since everyone's taste is different and everyone gets different things from the things that they see and hear. How could one person, what would be the benefit of a critic reviewing a film when the next person may just love something that he doesn't like or vice versa? Thank you for allowing me to ask that question.
Okay, thanks for the question. That's a thought-provoking question.
Well, the question could be expanded. Why do we need critics of any sort?
Right.
So if you accept the fact that critics are or could or perhaps might be useful to you, then why make an exception against film critics? Now, film critics, however, are in a somewhat different niche from other critics. For example, let me go to my favorite newspaper, after the News Gazette, of course, and the Daily Line, oh boy, which is the New York Times, the greatest paper in America. It has very interesting critics, very good critics, but I don't always agree with them. I'm talking about critics, for example, the literary critics. There's a lady called Michiko Kakutani, who's absolutely incredible. There's some very good art critics and so forth. And when I read them, I use them as guides. And also, it's fun to read. Now, film being a more ephemeral thing and also much closer to my knowledge. I mean, I'm also a professor of literature and language, but film is what I practice mostly. Is more tricky. A lot of people who don't have any training, the way the art critic or the literature critic or the music critic does, call themselves film critics and they start right away. There are more film critics. Everybody's a film critic. And of those everybodies, thousands try to get into print or on the internet or this and that, thinking that they have something to say. Now, a lot of those critics are ignorant, sometimes downright idiotic, often with terrible taste. But a lot of critics have something to offer, various points of view. And you said someone like Roger Ebert. Ebert is a highly, I think he's a very intelligent person. I don't necessarily agree with him, but the point of criticism is not agreement with the critic. It's to compare your point of view and her, his, their point of view. Ebert sees a lot of films. He knows an enormous amount about film, much more than a great number of film professors, for example, including me. I mean, I don't include, well, never mind where I include myself. So he is fun to read, he's useful to read, he guides, and he may help you make choices. If you disagree, well, a critic should not be judged by how much you agree and you disagree with him, but how good he is. For example, I plug Ebert. I plug also Stanley Kaufman, who's a much older man, and who writes, has been writing for a long time for the wonderful magazine, The New Republic. Stanley Kaufman is just a joy to read, and his judgment is very, very good. Do I agree with him all the time? I don't know, it's impossible, but I agree with him more than I agree with other people. A critic is not there to tell you whether to see a film or not, but of course the other thing is this. If you... what people should do is read a number of critics and then become familiar with the one whose taste resembles yours. And then you have someone to guide you.
Or it's often interesting to read someone you don't agree with and find out what they either liked or saw or didn't see in the same film that you watched.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting question, but I don't think that critics will be done away with. In fact, there'll be more and more and more. Right now, they're flooding the internet and their newspapers. Every town and village in the United States seems to have its critic.
Everybody's a critic. Let's go to another caller. Caller on line one. Hello.
Hello. The recent AFS Best or Most Influential 100 Films, I think, had a glaring omission, probably several. And I don't know if you have strong feelings or any feelings regarding this film, but I thought it was one of the most innovative films for a director who only directed one film, and that's Night of the Hunter,
yeah, Charles
done
Lawton.
By Charles Lawton. Yeah. And to be left off of that list, I think, was unconscionable.
It's a great pity. It's a great pity. On the other hand, let me say this. I agree with you with what you say, but I want to take it further. I don't agree with lists that are limited. When people ask me or anybody else, what are your favorite films? I cannot possibly answer. I'm frozen there. Okay, what are your favorite 10 films? Favorite 10 films? I don't know. Well, I do, but there are others. Your favorite 20 films and so forth. So I'll tell people, okay, why don't you ask me what are my favorite 1,000 films to start with, and I'll make you an alphabetical list. So this arbitrary thing of having a decimal thing, 100 most influential films, is... I don't want to be impolite, but it's extremely limited. Suppose you were a sheikh of Arabi and you had several wives and a progenitor. You had fathered 500 children, which happens. What would you say if they say, who are your favorite children? That's kind of difficult. So it's like having a huge family and having to choose. If you have a huge list, then you can eliminate some lesser stuff. But the film that you mentioned, The Night of the Hunter, is an absolute classic, and it deserves to be on the best list. So the least one can do is take that 100 film list and make it 101 to include this one.
I think I looked over the films, and I think that... Charlie Sheen was in more of the best 100 than Robert Mitchum and Burt Lancaster combined.
Well, if that's the case, it's pathetic. It is terrible. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Our next caller is on line 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, I had two questions. One is, have you heard about the new Pedro Almodovar?
Yes, I've seen it.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
What's it about? And do you like it?
I can't tell you exactly what it's about. It's kind of a family saga. It involves a lot of characters. Almodovar cannot be summarized. It is all about my mother, and it's about her relationships. Did I like it? Not very much. No, I prefer some other Almodovars. This one is left me a bit cold and too confused. On the other hand, I saw it at the Cannes Festival, which is not the best place to... No festival is the best place to judge films, because you are influenced by what you have seen before, what you are seeing after, and especially fatigue. The Cannes Festival, like other festivals, but more so, is one of the most exhausting things for a critic to do, or ordinary person in the world. It is a necessary evil, let me put it this way. Therefore, you are so exhausted, you have, if you're doing your job correctly, you get about 4 hours of sleep every night, or 4.5. And you have to have steel eyeballs and a terribly strong constitution to put up with all that work, that you become sometimes severe about that. I have found out in my experience, my private experience, not other people's, that generally speaking, a film that I kind of liked at Cannes, if I see it here again, I like it, not kind of like it. It goes up, say, one star. This has happened so many times that I'm unwilling to base my judgment on what I saw there. My original impression of the Almodovar film is that he has done better. But it may well be that I see it here again and it'll go up in my estimation. Mm. I'm sorry to be so vague about that, but most people, like the lady who called earlier, they don't trust critics. And being a critic, I don't trust myself.
I heard it was well received in Cannes, though.
It was well received because partly because Almodovar is Almodovar. You know, he's the fair-haired boy right now. He's one of the in people. But again, your question is a terribly hard to answer, very puzzling one, and confirms my decision to definitely go and see it again and write about it or judge it on the basis of the second showing than the first one. In fact, ideally, all critics should see, except for some films that are immediately magnificent or immediately despicable, all the other films, they should see them a second time, several days, weeks, or years even, after the first time, and then give their impression, give their judgment, which is, of course, a practical impossibility. I don't know if you follow me there, but it's not the ideal thing. You cannot, if someone gives you a haiku or a bunch of haikus and say, how do those compare with the other haikus and so forth? Well, they're short. You say, well, wait a minute, I'll tell you tomorrow. You reread them, you restudy them, and then you come to a conclusion. But film has this terrible immediacy that you see a film right away, you meet people as you come out of the theater, says, what do you think of it? I don't know. Let me think. Let me reflect.
Did you see Fight Club? I thought that was a strange film.
Strange is right. Strange is right. I will only say that.
Okay, well, thanks.
Thanks for your question.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Our next caller is on the toll-free line for a caller in Atlanta. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question on a show that I saw at the Normal Theater this weekend. It was a German show called Run Lola Run.
Oh, yes.
And I found it just absolutely fantastic, and I just wondered what your take was on that one.
Okay. I think it's very, very good. Fantastic. I don't know. It's a very novel film. It is actually playing... Oh, by the way, may I interrupt? Atlanta, how do you get on... Are you listening to us from Atlanta?
Yes, Atlanta, Illinois.
Atlanta, Illinois.
Oh, Atlanta, Illinois. I didn't know there was such a place. So you didn't get burned the way the other Atlanta did. Okay, good. So Run Lola Run is playing now
at the Normal Theater.
At the Normal Theater, which is not very far from here.
That's where I saw it, and I think it's over now.
Oh, what a pity. It's not a first film. It's made by a young German, has a great deal of imagination. Well, I won't describe it to you because you've seen it, and I quite agree. It's really worth... I think I watched it twice, in fact, the second time on video. And I think it's an excellent and intelligent and... it's clever. Also, it does clever things. It expands the standard parameters of cinema in a very intelligent way. And it's amusing.
Yeah, well, without it now, I have a mindset on your taste in films, and I'm going to feel real good about any recommendations you have, because that really was a good film. Thank you very much.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. No one is waiting online at the moment. If you'd like to give us a call, here are the telephone numbers. 333-WILL, that's the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. There was an interesting column in the New York Times recently. Actually, a column called Making Books, and the columnist Martin Arnold. And this was rather interesting to read about Hollywood's move this season, anyway, toward literary films, taking books and turning them into film. And there's an interesting quote here from Linda Obst, a movie producer. She put this trend this way. Literary material into movies usually only happens after there's either a disaster for the studios at Oscar night or in some mysterious way an adult market starts to rear its head and big-name directors use their leverage to get studios to buy literary. So the next question, the columnist writes, was... why can't the studios put that literature on the screens, win the awards, make the money?
Well, I can't answer that except very indirectly. I can never answer most of those questions directly and briefly because everything is complicated. They used to do that. They used to base most things on literature. Actually, most films that you see are based on books. But a lot of those books are little known or unknown. Generally speaking, if there's a rule, it works this way. If you take a very good novel and make a film, it's not going to be a success. If you take an unknown, mediocre, or undemanding, or unpretentious, whatever it is, novel, or sometimes a bad novel or a bad book, it can make a pretty good film. I think that who am I to say that, but I think that producers should look at bad stuff and do it, make it into something good. For example, remakes. There are a lot of remakes of American films to start with. In the second place, French films. French films have the second place in being remade as American films. A few of them are good, but by and very, very large, the remake is never as good as the original film. So my suggestion would be, my belief is that they should remake bad films and make them into good films. And I'm not being witty. I'm very sincere in what I say. In fact, I could quote chapter and verse, if I had the time, of such things happening in the history of cinema. Okay, that's one answer. Now, where are we? I kind of lose thread of my thread there. What was the other question? The books. Fewer films are generally based on books here. There's a very simple reason. Hollywood. is more and more teen-directed. Teenagers. Now, I have nothing against teenagers, but they don't have the experience of somewhat older people, even people in their late 20s or early 30s. Everything is made for teenagers. Preteens, teens, and some close post-teens. That's where the money is. That's where the popcorn sells. That's where the people... When I saw that the last film that I reviewed... the James Bond, there was a kid sitting behind. There wasn't a big crowd there. There were about 50 people in the audience, something like that, 40. There was a kid sitting in front of me who got up four times to get extra popcorn or other goodies. That kid probably was not stupid. That kid realized that the film, if he missed something, he had missed nothing in the film. And a film should be the kind that you don't have to miss. If you miss 1 minute, you're in trouble. So... teenagers, the market is teenagers and not mature people, and therefore films are not mature. The other thing is that not only is the market teenagers, but the producers are increasingly younger and younger, without any experience, without any knowledge, some of them ignoramuses. I know other words, but they're unprintable on the air, so to speak. And they have no idea, they don't know anything about the classics. You say to someone, ah, yes, that was made by Eric von Stroheim, or even like that gentleman who called earlier who mentioned that marvelous film, The Night of the Hunter. They have not the faintest idea who Charles Laughton was. Now, what does it mean, that everybody should have a tremendous memory? No. That everybody should be 80 years old and remember those things? No. But it means that the younger people are spending so much time watching inanities on, excuse me, television, not PBS, certainly, and sitcoms and so forth, and watching awful films, what in German you can call Dreckfilme, that... They don't keep up with the past. They don't keep up with the heritage. But the same thing applies to history, literature, geography, and so forth. I may sound severe, but that's unfortunately the truth.
Why don't we talk with some other callers? Our next caller is on line one, a caller in Champaign. Hello.
I'm thinking of a fun film, The Gods Must Be Crazy. Was there ever another one that followed that? Or
yes, there was.
Yes, there was a sequel.
Pardon?
There was a second film along those lines, which was also quite funny. I forget the title.
Okay.
Yes, there was.
I think
did
it. Did you see it? Was it?
Was it what?
I think it might have been the Gods Must Be Crazy too.
Oh. Okay.
Could be.
Well, check. I was wondering if it was worth looking up. If it was.
Well, look it up. If you have a computer, type that in and see if there is. If there are two films by that name, being computer literate doesn't really mean literate. It means knowing some of the tricks.
Either that or ask the folks at your favorite video rental place.
Right.
They generally have a slew of reference books.
Yes. Go to That's Rentertainment, which is a terrific place in town. And they have excellent... That's Rentertainment.
Okay.
It is. They have two stores, the latest one being at the corner of Lincoln and Nevada, and they have a fantastic collection. They keep up, they have good taste, and they're very friendly, and blah, blah, blah. And they also have a great cafe attached to the...
Very good.
So they don't, and they don't pay me for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. And let's talk with our last caller of the day, and we'll have to wrap it up quickly here because we're out of time. A caller on line two in Urbana. Hi.
Yes, this should be quick. I was coming in the back door, and I heard Mr. Jahil say... Yes, and I hope they bring it to the Art Theater because it is such a good picture. And I've been listening, and I didn't get the name of the picture. That was probably about 10 or 15 minutes ago.
I don't think I said I hope, or perhaps I did. I'm totally not responsible for what I say.
Nor am I.
But I think that what the art is bringing for sure, it's La Grande Illusion, Grand Illusion, a classic film by Jean Renoir made in the late 30s, and just a magnificent film that nobody who sees is untouched by that movie.
Well, that must be it, because I am ancient, and if it were made in the late 30s, I maybe saw it.
Okay,
so
good
luck. I'll try.
Good, okay. Good luck. Don't miss it.
Thank you.
And that film is coming to the art in January.
Sometime in January. Sometime. The dates have not been fixed. There's also another, there's some interesting films that I want also coming there. Because I know a bit ahead of time for the from the art what the schedule is going to be, which I do not know from the commercial theaters, because they don't know themselves. You see, they look at how much money they made Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and by Monday night they have the totals, and then they decide. They don't say, this is a good film, this is a bad film. They say, this made money, we keep it. This made little money, out it goes.
Yeah. Well, if you're in downtown Champaign, you can stop in and you can pick up a newsletter that they put together, and they offer a several weeks look ahead at what their films are going to be. We're out of time. We've got to go. Edwin Jael, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.